portable system is the size of a book when folded and small enough to fit into a briefcase, handbag, or glove compartment. The Berkey Solar Charger has been designed to power the Berkey Lights LED lamps as well as other applications such as mobile phones, radios, digital cameras, and PDAs when electricity is not available. Its multi-voltage capabilities, multiple adapters, and rechargeable batteries provide for a flexible source of auxiliary backup power. Simply place the Berkey Solar Charger in the sun, plug in your application, and you have power. Disconnect your application, the system automatically begins charging its own rechargeable batteries. Get the incredible Berkey Solar Charger.
Management, staff, sponsors, the supporters of the station you're listening to, they happen to be my views, and well, for the next hour, hopefully, they're going to be the views of Dr. Dennis Cuddy as we look into his series of writings of essays on Iran and the threat that of getting into a war with Iran. And of course, I'm very concerned that everything we're doing is designed to get us into a war with the whole Muslim world. And if you watch very carefully a lot of the material that's being circulated among the Christians, you'll find that a lot of it is, oh, we got to hate the Muslims, they want to kill us. There's one YouTube presentation that I've seen many times, and if you get a lot of things in the internet, you probably has too, and it shows this older Muslim, and he's speaking in Arabic, and he's talking about the anthrax they want to bring in to kill Americans, and how they want to use nuclear weapons to kill Americans. You have no idea who he is. You don't even know what he's saying, but they have an interpretation there for you, and you can sort of imagine from the way he's talking. But he obviously wants to destroy America. Well, but we don't know who he is. We don't know who he's interpreting it. We don't know anything about that DVD other than it's designed to make us hate the Muslim world. And there's an organized, orchestrated effort put out by our government today to prepare us for a war with the Muslim world, or at least the invisible government, because they want to plunge America into World War III. And until you understand how we are manipulated, many times even by our Christian leaders, who will point out all the bad things about the Muslim religion, and there are a lot of bad things about the Muslim religion, but that doesn't mean that we necessarily want to go over and kill them, because if we're Christians, we should want to convert them, and we should be concerned about their eternal souls. And certainly the average Muslim does not want to kill the average Christian, just like the average Christian doesn't want to kill or torture the average Muslim. But we have some very wicked and evil, sadistic people working at the highest levels of our government who wanted to torture and did torture many innocent Muslims, or even Muslims who may have been part of the jihadist movement, but they'd given all of the information they had through regular interrogation, and then they tortured them. And you wonder why Muslims throughout the world are joining the Al-Qaeda movement in an effort to destroy what they refer to as the Great Satan. We've lost our moral foundation as a nation, and unless we regain it, we will never preserve our freedom. And with that as the background, let's go to Dr. Dennis Cuddy, who writes regularly for News with Views. And if you don't read his articles there, why, you're missing a great deal of great information. Hi, Dennis. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. How are you?
I'm doing fine. What are we going to talk about? Are we going to continue talk about the threat of Iran?
Well, right, the role of Iran. I've been doing a series on this, and so we were in part five and about midway, so I thought I would continue that.
All right.
The last time I quoted Zbigniew Brzezinski's book, The Grand Chessboard, and he's a master planner of future events, foreseeing and sometimes perhaps planning the things that are coming down the road. And the quotes that I had used were about, in terms of, let's say, 9/11, but he's writing this book back in 1997. He's talking about a direct external threat that's widely perceived and that would develop a foreign policy consensus. And lo and behold, we have 9/11, and then we have this direct external threat widely perceived, and the foreign policy consensus is that we must do something about this, including Nancy Pelosi's forgetfulness about how she was briefed on waterboarding and other torture events. But anyway, the point is that not only was there a poll the afternoon, that very afternoon of 9/11, saying that two-thirds of Americans would be willing to give up some of their freedoms in order to have security. But another poll showed a similar result about torture. Would you be willing to torture people? And two-thirds of the poll said, sure, why not? And so the stage was set by this widely perceived direct external threat to allow them to do just about anything, including the freedom-infringing Patriot Act and Homeland Security Act. I guess we'll pick up after the break.
We certainly will. But first, really, Zygmunt Brzezinski's book, The Grand Chessboard, is must reading for anybody who wants to understand. He lays it all out there. You're never going to get the American people to, you know, get involved unless there's a perceived direct external threat. It doesn't have to be real. It has to be perceived. And certainly, didn't we all perceive what happened on September 11th? Was an external threat, or was it? Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. I guess this afternoon, Dr. Dennis Ketty, who has, of course, testified before Congress, has worked as a consultant, worked within the Department of Education during the Reagan years, and he's written extensively. We carry a number of the books that he has written, but right now he's writing regularly for newswithviews.com. That's newswithviews.com. We're talking about the situation as far as Iran is concerned. And, of course, the part that Zygmunt Brzezinski, who is really the master plotter behind everything, he's the man who picked Jimmy Carter to become the member of the Trilogy Commission and then got him into the presidency. I mean, he was an obscure little governor over there in Georgia until the big boys, the members of the Trilogy Commission, who really controlled both political parties, you know, picked Jimmy Carter. And then, of course, Zygmunt Brzezinski designed the Afghan war, recruited people for al-Qaeda, helped to finance al-Qaeda, and of course they did everything they could to produce the Taliban. We financed the textbooks that were used. I mean, tens of millions of dollars for textbooks that would encourage young people to get involved with this radical program, which didn't even exist until it was pushed by the American CIA. But now, of course, Zygmunt Brzezinski is back working behind the scenes, certainly guiding the current administration. Did you pick up the story there, Dennis?
Sure. The Obama administration is full of Clintonistas and others. I think the new CDC chairperson or head picked today is right out of the end of the Bush term and through the Clinton years and so forth. So it's deja vu all over again. This really isn't change. It's change in the sense that Clinton was, but really was not change from the first President Bush. And so what you have with Brzezinski being back as a primary advisor to Obama is a continuation of this scenario that they have mapped out. And just before the break, I was saying, if you have this widely perceived direct external threat, you can pretty well count on the American population to do what you want to. It's sort of like puppets. The public is a bunch of puppets. You have this attack, and immediately, in fact, as far as I'm concerned, too fast to be coincidental, that afternoon they had the results. You know, first of all, if you're going to sit down and draft a survey question, that takes time. I mean, you need to, you know, run it by, have a trial study, you know, be sure your wording is correct, all that. No. That afternoon, they had the results that two-thirds of the ABC Washington Post.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Dr. Ketty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Ketty was just saying that it was the most amazing thing that on the very afternoon of the attack on the World Trade Center on September 11, 2001, they already had a poll that they knew that the majority of the American people would give up their freedom, give up their security for protection against the wicked Islamic terrorists who supposedly had flown planes into the Twin Towers and then caused those towers to just descend, you know, symmetrically at the speed of gravity. And then, of course, there was building number 7, came down in the evening, wasn't hit by much of anything, wasn't hit by any airplane, came down looking just like a controlled demolition. But the American people, well, after all, the planes must have brought them down, the fire must have brought them down. And, of course, then they would never allow an independent investigation to see what happened. They immediately carted up all the material, all of the steel, And there wasn't much else because everything has disappeared, including 1,100 bodies have never been found. They just were all vaporized. Gee, how could they have been vaporized if the building just collapsed in pancake fashion? They would have been squashed, but the bodies wouldn't have been vaporized, but they were vaporized, and they immediately got rid of all the evidence and would not allow anyone to take any of the material out of the area there. And then there was the molten metal for weeks afterwards down in the sub-basement. Weeks the molten metal was still there. Gee, how would you get molten metal from a building pancaking down? But nobody wanted to ask the questions, and everybody was willing to follow our leaders into battle, first of all into Afghanistan, and then into Iraq, and now into Pakistan, and heaven only knows where else we're going to go to war. Go right ahead, Dr. Cuddy.
That's exactly right. In terms of Pakistan, just to note, at the end of the last program, that we had, I was mentioning how this widely perceived direct external threat and so forth applies anywhere. That is a power elite sort of scenario that Brzezinski and others would use. And it also applies to Pakistan. And I'm not just talking about Americans. I'm talking about Pakistanis, what the Pakistanis are willing to put up with given their widely perceived direct external threat and so forth. And same thing with India. You know, okay, here we have an attack in Mumbai. There's a widely perceived direct external, you know, like the whole scenario. In this case, up in the northwest Waziristan area, and okay, they're moving closer, 60 miles outside of Islamabad. A widely perceived direct external threat. External meaning the main population area of Islamabad looks like they're having a threat coming from the Taliban, from the Al-Qaeda elements in Taliban from the northwest. Anyway, it's the same scenario. So in this case of 9/11, you had that very afternoon, the poll results, not just the survey being taken, but the results saying two-thirds of the American people would be willing to give up some of their freedoms in order to have peace and security, and not long thereafter, a almost an identical poll result saying two-thirds of the American people would be willing to have our government torture prisoners or prisoners of war to obtain information. So, you know, this gives them sort of the cover that they want to do. And, of course, now Nancy Pelosi has a senior moment or something, forgetful about this stuff. But they all were in on it. I mean, they were all agreeing to this.
Don't forget the anthrax letters that were only sent to Democratic presidents, to Democratic senators. We had the anthrax letters scared the congressmen to death, you know. These anthrax letters are going around and nobody knows who's going to get one, but it was very interesting. They were only went to Democratic senators, not to Republican senators, just to Democratic senators. But that was just coincidence. Go right ahead.
Right, and the guy that they were pursuing as the primary instigator of that, lo and behold, he turned out not to be, and the guy who they finally said was just happened to commit suicide, and so, golly shucks, you know, I guess that's the end of it. Dr. Stan, I have discussed this amazing coincidence of the swine and avian and human flu that just happened to break out. And if you look for it, I put some stuff in the mail for you about that, Dr. Stan. You'll get it in
all right, fine. But you can rest assured there's nothing to worry about. The World Health Organization convened a committee, and they said there's no way this was possibly in any way made in some sort of a government laboratory. So we can assure you there's nothing to worry about. Why, they would never do anything like that. Right ahead.
Okay. The material I sent you indicates that right now some respected scientists are saying that's probably exactly where it came from. And then the scientists were saying, the original scientists saying, well, it must have been accidentally let loose. But then what another item I put in there said some other respected scientists, I think in Europe, said there's no way it could have been, quote, accidentally let loose. So,
well, it was sort of like when Baxter had this influenza vaccine and it circulated all throughout Europe. And the Czechoslovakians said, well, before we're going to use your vaccine, we're going to inject it into ferrets, I guess it was. And they injected the ferrets and they all died. And so then they checked it out, and lo and behold, there's the H5N1. That's the deadly influenza virus that's killing so many birds. And they were going to inject it to all the people over there in Europe. And Baxter said, "Oh shucks, we guess we just made a mistake. We're so incompetent." Go right ahead.
Right, and now they're developing a vaccine for us come the fall and winter when this thing is supposed to come roaring back. And remember what happened to their last swine flu vaccine. I think more people were killed from the vaccine than from the flu.
About 25 of them. Of course, there were 500 people who got Guillain-Barré disease. Many of them are still paralyzed from that. There was only one person who died of the swine flu, and 25 people died of the vaccine, and 500 came down with Guillain-Barré. I mean, I'd not say that it's neither safe nor effective.
Well, that's right. So, back to the article I had. Where we left off was this widely perceived direct external threat. And Brzezinski, anticipating or probably planning the future, made another statement in that book that America's primary interest is to help ensure that no single power comes to control this geopolitical space. He's talking about Eurasia there. And that the global community has unhindered financial and economic access to it. Now, you would think that a patriotic nationalist would not have that view. Only a globalist power lead agent would have the view that no single power and everybody has unhindered financial and economic access to it. You wouldn't want to go to war to prevent somebody from making, in Russia, from making an investment in the Caspian oil or something like that. But the attitude that he has is, it's like a person sitting above everything and looking down benevolently and saying, well, yes, I am an American, and yes, I do love my country, but, the world is what I must focus on, and we superior beings must, and so we want to bestow in a fair manner our generosity. I mean, you can just hear those wheels cranking in their heads like this, which of course would not be a foreign policy from a strictly American viewpoint, an American perspective. It's totally globalist viewpoint that we have to, parcel out the benefits in a managed form so that we can have peace and harmony and according to our philosophy. You can just see the way the way these people think. So anyway, only a globalist like Brzezinski would think this way rather than a patriotic nationalist. And what you would look at is to see what his overall view is, and not just surmise. I mean, what I just said is, you can judge from that what his viewpoint is, but we don't have to do that. If you look at his address he had in Mikhail Gorbachev's first State of the World Forum in 1995, he clearly there is saying that he supports world government, and he's actually outlined in that speech a strategy using as a first step what he calls, quote, progressive regionalization to get there. So this isn't just wishful thinking. He's actually outlining a procedure very nicely and so on. So the next part of my article, I say, remember that the power elite, including Cecil Rhodes, have planned all of this for a very long time. It's not just Brzezinski. Brzezinski is sort of the latest person in this master plot. Rudyard Kipling, for example, who has, we've mentioned before, swastikas on his early books, in 1888 wrote, quote, "For the North, guns always, quietly, but always guns."
And, of course, basically what you're inferring is that Rudyard Kipling was involved in the occult, as was, of course, Cecil Rhodes, as was, of course, Milner, as was Mr. Stead, William Stead, one of the founders or co-founders of Cecil Rhodes Secret Society. He was into theosophy and spiritualism. So behind all of this movement towards world government are these occult forces, which, of course, nobody ever addresses, do they?
No. No, they don't. In fact, in a previous program some months ago, I was quoting Stead's address to that Parliament of World Religions back in 1893, the first one, not the one in 1993, the second one, but the one over 100 years ago. And he also, we mentioned before, and I think part one or two of the power elite and role of Iran, how he got Annie Besant to write a review of Blavatsky's Secret Doctrine for his paper, the Pall Mall Gazette, and so on. So, yeah, he's definitely into this. And the quote I just gave comes from Writings in Prose and Verse of Rudyard Kipling that was published in 1899. Now, I mentioned in the previous part of the series Mike Evans' book, Jimmy Carter, The Liberal Left and World Chaos. And so in that book, Evans, asked this question, quote, could he, Kipling, have possibly known that nearly 100 years hence, the policies of first Jimmy Carter, then Ronald Reagan, that, you know, supposed conservative there, as well as the ruling junta in Pakistan, would supply the weapons necessary to raise a Mujahideen army to fight the Russians, that's north, in Afghanistan. Afghanistan, north of Pakistan, question mark. That's Evans' quote. And what I say is, could Kipling have, he's continuing. This is Evans.
Hold that thought. We're going to have to take a break here, and as soon as we get back, we want to get the rest of the quote here. Well, go right ahead.
Okay, the rest of Evans' quote about Kipling and what he had written is, Evans says, quote, could Kipling have unknowingly prophesied the mayhem that would arise from the decisions made by men as yet unborn, question mark, end quote. And what I say after that is, since Kipling was a member of the Rhodes Trust, his remarks may not have been made, quote, unknowingly, quote, because all of these things are pretty well mapped out in the future. They, you know, they'll make minor adjustments here and there, but the basic plot line goes forward, and it's been over 100, 200, I mean, you can even go back further than that. But recently, it involves the Rhodes people, Rhodes Trust, Rhodes Scholars, some of them, not all of them, but in fact, most of them. Now, Brzezinski, recently, he's been an advisor to Barack Obama, and he has defended President Obama's decision to meet with the Iranian officials in the future. Now, what would happen with that is the Iranians will probably welcome that, oh, yes, and they're very good at talking, and they often use that as a delaying tactic until they have a nuclear weapon and so on. So the scenario which is planned out looks like this. They'll proceed down the road developing nuclear capabilities. At some point, Israel will in all likelihood say, well, we can't wait any longer, and they will plan to launch some sort of preemptive strike against Iran. They've already, I think, broached the subject with the United States. And we've been saying, well, you know, there are consequences and so forth. U.S. will try to dissuade Israel from taking that sort of action because, as I mentioned in the last program, if a real war breaks out, Iran has all sorts of capabilities. They can block the Strait of Hormuz easily, you know, sink a tanker and so forth. They can hit the Saudi oil refineries, creating a global fuel supply crisis. Iranian agents in this country, and I've talked about it before, if they're trained in evasive tactics, they can set, there's been these horrible fires recently out in Santa Barbara, and it's supposed to be, have been accidental. Well, what if you had 300 such fires deliberately set in California, Texas, you know, all over the place? It'd be nothing to do that by trained Iranian agents, trained in evasive tactics, and I mentioned before how those untrained snipers, Malvo and Mohammed, it took a month to even catch them, and they didn't wander all over the country. They stayed pretty well on the East Coast, and so you can imagine what would happen. Now, if the power elite is in control, though, and Iran's Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is actually from, as Dr. Stan says, central casting, then all of the dire consequences possible from a real war may have as its real purpose simply to coerce Israel and Iran and the American public and so on into negotiating a peaceful resolution that would lead all parties further down the road to accepting the power elite's goal of a world socialist government. Now, how would, I ask the question, how would Israel, for example, be manipulated into such negotiations? Well, on the PBS Charlie Rose show about a month ago, April 7th, you had former Director of National Intelligence John Negroponte, and he said that just as only a conservative, take that with a grain of salt, conservative like President Nixon could open the door to communist China. Negroponte said perhaps only a conservative like new Israeli leader Benjamin Netanyahu.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly, Dennis was cutting, quoting a program recently, that Charlie Rosso and Negroponte, formerly with the Office of Homeland Security, was saying that certainly only a conservative like Richard Nixon could have opened the door to communist China. And certainly then perhaps only a conservative like, and pick the story up.
Like the new Israeli leader, Benjamin Netanyahu, could make the compromises with Israel's opponents necessary for peace. So it's often that way. Everybody perceived Nixon as a conservative, but if you look, even in the late 40s, he was sponsoring legislation that would have had a federal government of Europe and the U.S. Same thing with George Bush, George H.W. Bush, in I think it was 1969. He introduced a congressional resolution. I think it was Resolution 468. Same thing, a federal union of Europe and the U.S.
And I think it's so important for people to understand that Netanyahu is not conservative. He poses as conservative. He plays the game. But actually, of course, he's simply under the control of Henry Kissinger. Those of you who listen to our programs with Barry Shamus, Barry Shamus is an Israeli patriot, has been following Israel for a long time. He thinks Netanyahu is as phony as a $3 bill. He's handsome, he's articulate, he speaks great English, and he's been bought and purchased by the establishment. So we go along with their program. But the people in Israel think he's, of course, going to try to preserve Israel. It would take a man who is perceived as trying to preserve Israel to betray Israel. Go right ahead.
They are not allowed to get in those positions of prominence until they are basically bought. I was talking to a woman who's a host, I think it was on Israeli National Radio, and she was saying, oh, how shocked they were that Ariel Sharon did what he did. Lo and behold, you know, they found out that he wasn't the conservative person they thought. And I said, well, you know, that's a reason for that. These people are put in those positions of power to sort of trick that particular element, conservative Israelis or conservative Americans, into thinking, well, this is our fellow, you know, this is our alternative to those nasty liberals and so on. And the point is, all of them, when they are allowed, permitted, to reach that level of power, regardless of whether they portray themselves as conservative or liberal, are pretty much bought, pretty much. And so what I'm saying is, in this case, what you'll find is that Bibi Netanyahu will, you know, talk the talk, but then he will probably be the one to make the compromises with Israel's opponents that is, as they say, necessary for peace. And, of course, you know, and if you look at the Bible, they'll say, peace, peace, there is no peace. And, you know, in the end, as everything appears to be going okay, all heck breaks loose and comes out of this great peaceful world that they have developed for us. And so the next thing I say is, and how would the Obama administration approach the subject of Iran, which is confronting them now? Well, President Obama has indicated he is open to talks with Iran. And then I say, from where does this openness come? And so what you look at is, just like Negroponte is the former director of national intelligence, if you look at the current Obama director of national intelligence, that's Dennis Blair. Now remember, whenever you have a strategically important position, you're probably going to find a Rhodes Scholar, and sure enough, that's what Dennis Blair is. And he was under Clinton. You know, same thing. Let's get a Rhodes Scholar and put him in this strategic position. So he's Director of National Intelligence. Now, what is Blair's thinking? Well, you got to remember, Blair wanted Charles Freeman to head the National Intelligence Council. Well, who's Freeman? Freeman, he happened to have withdrawn his name from nomination, but that's who Blair wanted. Freeman had been on the board of directors of the American Iranian Council, the AIC. The Obama administration does not seem sufficiently concerned about the fact that the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, the IRGC, and or Iran's Ministry of Intelligence and Security, it's it, in their language, it's abbreviated VEVAK, V-E-V-A-K, have their spies operating out of embassies and consulates around the world, including ours, including the ones here. They have thousands of agents who have been responsible for many terrorist attacks in Iraq and elsewhere. I think I hear the music.
You have to, but I would just comment, people have forgotten that the American CIA brought the mullahs to power in Iran in 1979. Why would we have done anything that stupid? Not only that, but of course we trained, you know, the intelligence gathering organization for the Shah, and they were just incorporated by the mullahs. In other words, the people we trained for the Shah went to work for the mullahs, and then of course we covered up when they were responsible for the bombing of the Marine barracks and the American embassy in Lebanon. We covered that up. We knew the attacks were coming and did nothing to stop it. If you want to verify it, we'll give you the documentation. This is Dr. Stan back here. Go right ahead, Dennis.
I like that Kate Smith music.
I love that, too. In fact, I sometimes, if it weren't for you being here, well, I would have played it for 2 or 3 minutes, but many times I do. But let's get back to the really important things that are going on today, because there are few people who have the insightful approach that you do.
Okay, thank you. Before the break, I said, here's the fellow National Intelligence Director Blair, and he wants a man, Freeman, who is on the board of directors of the American Iranian Council, to be head of our intelligence, National Intelligence Council. So you might sort of wonder if there might be some sort of bias there. And so you need to reflect on what Iran has done. They've given huge amounts of money to various groups like the Taliban in Afghanistan, Hamas in Palestine. They've given $100 million per year to Hezbollah in Lebanon. The stress to various nations that's brought about by such terrorist activities around the world, what happens is the power elite uses that, the stress put upon those nations, to pressure those nations into negotiations that will pave the way towards their ultimate goal, which I've mentioned is a world socialist government. Now, in case your listeners doubt that the power elite, who's really over all this stuff, has been planning these world events for decades, I would ask them to just reflect upon the following quote, and this is from Senator Joe McCarthy in his book, The Fight for America, was published in 1952. And so this is 1952, Senator McCarthy, his own words, he says, quote, "Before meeting Secretary of the Navy Jim Forrestal, I thought we were losing to international communism because of incompetence and stupidity on the part of our planners. I mentioned that to Forrestal. I shall forever remember his answer. He said, 'McCarthy, consistency has never been a mark of stupidity. If they were merely stupid, they would occasionally make a mistake in our favor.'" And then McCarthy finishes by saying, "This phrase struck me so forcefully that I have often used it since," end quote. And so that's exactly what they do. And it's been going on for a long time. It was going on 50 years ago, 100 years ago. It's going on today. They are not that stupid by accident. That's similar to that NASA phrase that NASA used after McCarthy said that. You know, you Americans make complicated...
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. It's in the... Dr. Cuddy was just commenting, quoting from Joe McCarthy, Senator McCarthy, who commented that he had always thought that the mistakes that the government were making were just honest mistakes, until he talked to James Forrestal, the Secretary of the Navy, and Forrestal said, you know, or inferred, you know, these were not simply mistakes, that they'd make simple mistakes, that occasionally make mistakes in our favor. But Forrestal, of course, recognized that there was a power elite behind what was going on. He was going to try to bring it out. He went into Bethesda, Naval Hospital, and my goodness, he just jumped out one of the floors there and died after a so-called suicide. And then, of course, Joe McCarthy went in for a routine examination there at Bethesda not too long after that, and he came out very, very dead. Going for a routine examination, I talked to a doctor who actually did the examination on Joe McCarthy, went into the hospital. He was quite healthy when he went in, and 5 days later, he was quite dead. Could those things really go on in America? Well, of course, the story of the strange death of James Forrestal has caused a lot of people to wonder, but most people really don't understand that above everything, there are powerful spiritual forces. I believe there is a spiritual hierarchy that rules the world, and that's what they say. If you haven't read our little pamphlet on the spiritual hierarchy put out by the Luciferians, we'd be glad to provide it for you. But go right ahead, Dennis.
That's important, that those aren't just isolated. I remember about 40 years ago, when Nixon was president, he had to have something done medically. And they would say, well, we'll check you into Bethesda. And I remember Nixon at the time said, most people have forgotten this, but he said, Bethesda? I'm not going into Bethesda. If I go in there, I'll never come out alive. And he knew what was going on. You know, he knew that that was a place of sometimes no return. So if we look at what's going on today from the Iranian perspective, you get an idea of that if you actually look at what they're doing. Now, you know, you have to take certain things with a grain of salt if they're coming from the Iran news agency, but still, it's worth looking at. So a few days ago, on May 6th, Ahmadinejad was in Damascus for a conference, and it comes out, and the title that the Iranian news agency gives is, Ahmadinejad, Iran and Syria should look for creation of a new world order. U.S. needs Iran and Syria. And subtitle, we should look for a new world order in the president, and it goes on. And what he's saying is that he said that in addition, this is Ahmadinejad, from their perspective, he said in addition to resistance and steadfastness, what Iran and Syria should look for is a creation of a new world order. And he said otherwise new cruel regimes would be created. So they had this meeting of these senior delegations, Iran and Syria, and he underlined, you know, the bullying powers, especially the U.S., aren't going to get away with what they're doing, and the world situation is awful. And he said, now this is their perspective, that the U.S. statesmen are facing a contradiction. He said on the one hand they want to protect and save Israel, on the other hand they need Iran and Syria. So what he's actually up to is something of their own sort of new world order. What they do is they have this communique, and both of the presidents, President of Syria and Iran, underlined that the hegemonic powers, that's including us, led by us, have reached a dead end, and that Iran and Syria should play an effective role in the creation of a new and correct world order. And it concludes like this. It said they considered expansion of ties and cooperation among countries of the region, see, there's that region again, regional government, that's part of the scenario, the region necessary, and said that quadrilateral cooperation between Iran, Syria, Iraq, and Turkey would be beneficial and strategic for nations of the region. So that's what they're up to. Iran is trying to develop this region where they would be dominant, and included would be Syria, Iraq, and Turkey. Remember, Turkey's part of NATO. So that's their wedge. That's what Iran is up to, not only from just a general geopolitical angle and strategy, but in terms of developing nuclear capabilities. What they're really thinking is they may never, you know, they huff and they puff. It would probably be suicidal if they developed a nuclear weapon and launched it against Israel. In fact, they know it would be suicidal. But what they hope to do is use that as a means of coercion with nations like Turkey and say, hey, you know, you're in this region, you know, you want to play ball with us, you do want to cooperate, you know, Muslim brothers, and so forth, to gain a dominance there. And they will use that dominance in Iraq and in other places in the region so that they will become the dominant force in that region. But remember, it's a region. So if Ahmadinejad is part of central casting, then what they're doing is developing that block as a regional entity, which will then be linked up with the other regions. The European Union, ASEAN, and Asia, and so forth. So that this is his part of developing this regional entity. And so that's what they mean when they say this new world order that they're developing. And so that's the Iranian perspective on this. Now, that would be the conclusion of the article I did, part five, in this. And so what you want to do is, what I want to do rather, is look at in this country what's going on and how domestically we're preparing people for what is to come. Because remember, there's this widely perceived direct external threat and so on. So in Iran, Ahmadinejad is saying, okay, they have this widely perceived direct external threat. So they have to band together in this regional entity to combat this widely perceived direct external threat. So in this country, domestically, what they're doing is, and you may have mentioned this with other people, but I don't know, but the Department of Homeland Security has what's called right-wing extremism, current economic and political climate, fueling resurgence in radicalization and recruitment. Now, right off the bat, they say, well, we don't have any specific cases, you know, of any mass movement to overthrow the government. However, you need to be careful because there are these threats. And it talks about these terrorists. And it says, well, some of them might be military veterans who are returning home from fighting terrorists. And, you know, they may, quote, reject federal authority in favor of state or local authority. Gosh, you know, what a revolutionary concept. But, you know, that's something you need to watch out for. This is what Homeland Security is saying to various elements of government entities at state level around the nation. You've got to watch out for those people. They may reject federal authority in favor of state or local authority. And they go on and say, quote, groups and individuals that are dedicated to a single issue, such as opposition to abortion or immigration. See, it's always portrayed as these right-wing extremism. You oppose abortion, you oppose immigration, basically, you know, illegal immigration, well, you know, you could be a domestic terrorist. And so they're saying here that they may, you have to watch out for these people. So once again, if they don't have like a 9/11 attack, what they have to have is this, you know, domestic terrorism. You have international terrorism, the widely perceived direct external threat, and then you have the internal threat. And so what they do is they say, this is from their own document, under key findings. The current economic and political climate has some similarities to the 1990s when right-wing extremism experienced a resurgence fueled largely by an economic recession. Criticism about the outsourcing of jobs. See, once again, if you the listener, are criticizing outsourcing of jobs, you might be somebody they want to watch for. And then they say, and the perceived threat. See, that's that word again. The perceived threat to U.S. power and sovereignty by other foreign powers. So if you have this perceived threat to the U.S. and our sovereignty, you might need to be watched. And so then they go on, as in the next paragraph, talk about the right-wing extremist groups might begin to plan and train for violence against the government. And it says there's a high volume of purchases and stockpiling of weapons and ammunition by right-wing extremists in anticipation of restrictions and bans in some parts of the country that continue to be primary concern to law enforcement. So if you were actually going out and buying weapons because you think that the government might crack down and have legislation that compromises your Second Amendment rights, once again, you are somebody who needs to be watched. And it goes on further in the current economic and political climate. And it throws in the element of racism. You know, we just elected this African-American president. Well, you know, there you go. The right-wing extremists who have these racist tendencies. And it goes on and says, influenced by this racist ideology and belief in anti-government conspiracy theories. See, if you have this conspiracy theory, you think the government's trying to, and they say use gun confiscation, citizen detention camps, and a one-world government, it says Jewish control, but the one-world government is the thing. So So if you believe the government might engage in gun confiscation, they might have citizen detention camps, and there might be a plan for one world government, well, you need to be watched. And so they're once again ramping up the same thing. This is what Clinton was saying. Same thing back in the 90s. And this is where they have their activity within the country. And then they have a whole section on illegal immigration. Yeah, once again, right-wing extremists, they say, were concerned during the 90s with the perception that illegal immigrants were taking away American jobs through their willingness to work at insignificantly lower wages. Well, are they? Are there illegal immigrants? Are they getting jobs that Americans had? Are they working for lower wages? As I said in a previous column I did with News with Views about economic discrimination against African Americans and others, what's happening is, let's say under the guest worker program, what happens is a group of immigrants is brought into the country by a contractor, put basically in a house which acts like a dormitory. There may be 10 of them in there, 3 per bedroom, 1 on a cot in the living room. And instead of paying a $100, let's say, utility bills each, like an American family would do, a husband, wife, child, they only have to pay $10 each, so they can work for lower wages. So what this is doing is saying there are people concerned about these illegal immigrants, their willingness to work at significantly lower wages, taking away American jobs. You know, like this is something that's not happening. Of course it's happening. And then it goes on to these people, these right-wing extremists, also oppose free trade agreements, arguing that these arrangements resulted in Americans losing jobs to countries such as Mexico. Well, haven't they? And so anyway, what they're doing is stating things which are provably true and saying, if you see somebody who's concerned about those things, well, that person might need to be watched. That could be a domestic terrorist. So, you know, this gives them also the excuse for monitoring you, right? I mean, we got to keep tabs on these people who have these views. And so next thing it goes on to is open source reporting of wartime ammunition shortages has likely spurred the right-wing extremists. See, so it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Lo and behold, there's shortages. Oh, my goodness, you know, I have to go out. Ammunition is scarce. Okay. So what they do is they buy in bulk, and the increased cost of ammunition comes along, and this, therefore, this document says, exacerbates right-wing extremist groups and leading to further stockpiling activity and so forth and so on. So it's like this growing threat and so on. And then they go down to the threat from other countries. See, it's both domestic and threat from other countries. And, again, it's the right-wing extremists, and the word they use there is paranoia. See, in other words, all of these things, like concern about one world government confiscating your guns, this is paranoia. Because why? Well, the government would never do that, would they? I mean, forget the fact that the Eric Holder, who's Attorney General, has in the past said that you, the listener, have no Second Amendment rights as an individual. It only applies to state militia. You know, ignore that he's actually said that. You must be paranoid if you think the government would come along and confiscate your weapons. But here they are. This is their document, Homeland Security. This paragraph says, right-wing extremist paranoia of foreign regimes could escalate or be magnified in the event of an economic crisis. You know, golly shucks. What have we just had, an economic crisis? Okay. Or military confrontation, hearkening back to the, quote, New World Order, quote, conspiracy theories of the 1990s. That, you know, think about that. In other words, what they're doing is setting up the obvious, the provable, and if you believe in the obvious and the provable, then you are part of this great threat which justifies them doing the very things to you that you're scared about. And so, in fact, I remember a cartoon some years ago where the cartoonist actually laid those things out, where the government actually did these things and then said, you know, golly shucks, you know, these people were concerned about it, and sure enough, they did. Who would have thought? So anyway, what you have is you're paranoid if you believe in these things which are happening in front of your eyes, and it could be magnified in the event of this economic crisis, which, lo and behold, we've got, or military confrontation, which, lo and behold, we will have, I assure you, And this harkens back to the, quote, New World Order conspiracy theories of the 1990s. Well, you know, the question is, were they true? I mean, is there this New World Order? Isn't that what Henry Kissinger is talking about today? Isn't that what Ahmadinejad from Central Casting is talking about today? Isn't this what the Prime Minister of England, Brown, is talking about today? I mean, aren't they using that term, New World Order? And so what they do is just bring up facts and say, well, if you believe in this stuff, well, there you go. And then it goes on in the usual stuff about the dissolution of communist countries in the East and Soviet Union led some right-wing extremists to believe that this new, quote, new world order would bring about a world government that would usurp the sovereignty of the United States and its Constitution. Well, are we losing our sovereignty? Don't these people, the power elite people, quote, I mean, Richard Haass, right, head of the CFR, hasn't he said we have to have this dilution of national sovereignty? So once again, the very people, the power elite, who are in charge of the government, who use the terms like, well, we have to, you know, lessen our sovereignty, and this document comes along and says, well, those New World Order paranoid conspiracy types actually think that the government may usurp the sovereignty of the United States. Well, I mean, all they have to do is look at their own boss's words. You know, go look at Richard Haass's words. He said, that's what we need. Now, that's what these people are saying. Kissinger, Brzezinski, all of them are saying this. However, if we believe it, you know, we're identified as right-wing paranoid conspiracy theorists believing in this New World Order conspiracy, which, in their opinion, only idiots would believe in, even though their bosses are using those exact words.
And, of course, there really is groups out there that are totally dedicated to a one world government, the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers. There's small groups of very powerful people that meet in secret. You know, of course, you and I can't get into the CFR meetings at all because, of course, they're all secret. But nobody ever calls them a secret society. And the same thing is true with the Bilderbergers. And you can read about them. But, of course, what are they really doing? I've been there to their headquarters. I will tell you, they were planning for the Second World War in 1938. Before Germany ever attacked Poland, they knew it was coming down the line. I'll go right ahead, Dennis. You've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, basically, the Department of Homeland Security goes through this, and then at the end, they have this, what they call the final section, the outlook. And in there, and this, your listeners should think about this, they're talking about, well, you know, there are factors that will necessitate a heightened interest in legislation for tighter firearms restrictions. Yeah, we might have to do that. And, yeah, you do have these returning military veterans and these new trends, and, yeah, I guess we do have this uncertain economy. And, yeah, there is influence from other countries coming in here. And that probably will lead to invigorating right-wing extremist activity. Specifically, you know, you have to attach the label here, specifically the white supremacist and militia movements. And to the extent that these factors persist, right-wing extremism is likely to grow in strength. So that's the relevant. So what do you do about it? Well, they say, well, you know, we got to look at the Internet, because, see, this is where, this is the next paragraph, they may be communicating with each other. So, you know, maybe we ought to watch what people are saying on the Internet. Given these domestic extremists, you know, if they use the Internet, it says they have, quote, greater access to information related to bomb-making, weapons training, and tactics, as well as the targeting of individuals, you know, potentially making extremist individuals and groups more dangerous, and the consequences of their violence more severe. So, see, here we up the ante, the alarm. And so then it says new technologies also permit domestic extremists to send and receive encrypted communications. Well, see, there you go. We got to get into monitoring what these people are doing, and that means you and I, all of us. I mean, you never know who might be one, right? So we'll have to take measures to monitor people on the Internet. And so it goes along and says we will have to work with various law enforcement agencies and so forth to keep tabs on these people, given today's climate. We will work, it says, with our state and local partners over the next several months to ascertain with greater regional specificity the rise of right-wing extremist activity in the U.S., particular emphasis on the political, economic, and social factors. So what they do is they create the scenario, They send this report out to all the state and local people. They say, don't you see these things happening? Don't you see the potential threat? And so what we need to do is monitor all of these people, and we want all of us to share this information.
Well, Dennis, we're out of time. God bless you. That was a beautiful summation of the Office of Homeland Security warning about the danger of the radical right. They never mention the danger of the radical left. If they do, they never let anybody know about it. God bless you. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thank you. You too.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We do hope you enjoy our interviews with Dr. Dennis Cuddy. We do talk during the break, so if you'd like to get the complete tape or the CD, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. How do we understand what's going on today? There have been secret societies around for thousands of years, moving us towards a one-world government. And right now, for the first time in all of recorded history, everything is in place for that to occur. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. We have a new membership list. It's a syllabus, the membership list of the members of the Brotherhood of Darkness. You can't tell the players without a program. You can't figure out why the Obama administration is so intent upon turning Chrysler over to Fiat. I mean, they're not putting any money up. All they are supposed to do is come up with a good engine that'll go 40 miles an hour on the road. My goodness, I think Chrysler could do that. I think certainly anybody could do that. But they're not going to put any money. But why are they going to give Chrysler to Fiat? Well, because the CEO of Fiat is a member of the Trilateral Commission. You can't tell the players without a program. There are 11 immediately past or present members of the Trilateral Commission, the major advisors to the Obama administration. Did you ever wonder who put up the $600 to $700 million that was invested in electing Barack Obama to the presidency? Finest president money could buy. They only give about half as much money to McCain, but they always finance the people on both sides. They buy our congressmen on a regular basis. You go back and read what Thomas Jefferson was writing 200 years ago about the threat of the purchase of our politicians, and nothing's changed. It's like deja vu all over again. They got the TARP bill through back there on October 3rd by adding $150 billion to the $700 billion original, and they bought 55 congressional votes at about $2.25 billion a congressman. You see, they're the finest congressman money could buy. You need to get our material, the Brotherhood of Darkness, the membership list of the Brotherhood of Darkness, our talk on the forbidden secret. It goes into the fact that for 3,000 years there have been secret societies out there moving us towards world government. And of course, we carry the book that came from, written by a Satanist. In fact, he was the teacher of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. His name was Manly P. Hall, and President Roosevelt actually sent a crew out to Southern California to the Philosophical Research Society to get copies of all of Hall's books so he would understand, and he could understand this move towards world government, which he was so intimately involved with. You need to get the DVDs we have, the Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, Riddles in Stone, and Eye of the Phoenix, which goes into the relationship between Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Manly P. Hall and Nicholas Roark, and the two of them were Satanists. And why was FDR so interested in them? And, of course, his wife, Eleanor, was deeply involved in the occult. But nobody's going to tell you that, not at least through regular talk radio. That's why, of course, we do what we do 5 hours a day. If you'd like to get the little pamphlet put out by the occultists, it's called the working of the spiritual hierarchy, why? If you get anything else from us, just request a copy, or want a copy of the Earth Charter. If you get something else, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Remember, the conspiracy conference is going to be held on the 6th and 7th of June at the Marriott Hotel in the Great American Parkway up in Santa Clara. You can go to their website, conspiracycon.com. Conspiracycon.com, and make a reservation. I'm going to give the lead-off speech on Saturday morning. Don't forget our Radio Liberty Conference on the 25th of October. Had about 180 people there last year. Hope you can come this year. Going to be a great lineup of speakers. But we're involved in a spiritual battle. There really are spiritual forces out there. And